Welcome everybody to today's online session in our online meta retreat. And first, I have some good news. The internet connection has vastly improved this afternoon, so I was able to put on the recordings of yesterday and the day before yesterday on my website. And later on, when I have time, I will put the link again into the chat. So then, as usual, we will start this session with some sharing. So anybody who feels inclined to share something about their practice in the last 24 hours, please raise your digital hand or unmute yourself and start talking. Yes, Marike, please.
Thank you. This morning I went, as usual, to the market to do my shopping to the vegetable, biological vegetable. And so it was raining and I came back on the bicycle and then just before me someone passed and I almost went against him, but the first reaction was, may you be safe. I was so surprised. There was no irritation or other things. So happy to practice. Yeah. That's what I wanted to share.
Yes, thank you, Marike. Yes, Martin.
Just a few minutes ago, I had an experience with a doctor, and the center where I go is not very. People are not very calm, and the doctor was in French. We said, "La comme une porte de prison," like she's kind of like a jail door. And so I remember the teaching yesterday, and I continue to laugh because I exactly do the opposite. I was smiling, and I was very kind generally when I see the experience with persons who are not kind. It's difficult for me to be smiled and so on. And so it's funny for me.
Thank you, Martin. Yes, please, Linda.
Well, I want to say, first of all, I'm so happy to be here, and I love seeing everybody in the morning. I love listening to the talks. And I just want to say, you know, it's interesting because I'm doing this kind of a half thing. I was able to take off mornings from work, and then I go into work. And the people I work with, they're very nice and all that, but, you know, they're kind of, they have a lot of snarky, you know, the word snarky kind of mean-spirited, but kind of funny way of talking about everybody. You know, nobody is doing a good job, blah, blah, blah. And usually it doesn't bother me at all. But now when I go, it's like it seems like almost like clanging. It's so loud in my ears, like, whoa. So anyway, it's been interesting. And the other thing I just wanted to say, you know, this practice, one of the things I really love about it is that it just makes me so aware of my own ego. And I was thinking when we were doing the first day of loving kindness to our teachers, and one of the prompts was, may they be safe and protected, I think. And I thought, oh, that's a great one. I'm going to use that. And somewhere along the line, I realized that what I really was thinking was, let maybe be safe and protected so that it could keep on teaching me. So anyway, but I'm really wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. And Henny, please.
Hi, I'm also very glad to be back after last year's retreat. And I noticed that with an online retreat, it always takes some more time for me to get into the flow of the retreat. And it seems to take a bit longer. But this morning I was walking outside and I suddenly noticed that in my mind, my voice was singing "Freedom, Sie mir," and then I realized I'm back. I'm in the groove. This is it. I cannot remember that we actually sang the song, but this is one of the songs that stayed with me for weeks after last year's retreat. So it was the first to pop up this morning.
Thank you, Henny. Well then, after this silent sharing, I hand over to Aya Viranyani, who will give her reflections and guide us in the meditation.
Thank you, dear sister. Before I begin my reflections, I want to apologize in advance. Here in Malaysia, Chinese New Year's is beginning to get closer, and what that has been coming with, and I don't know if it will happen, but it might, is noise, fireworks. So I may pause or mute myself if somebody quite close is doing something quite loud. And if any of you by any chance have some difficulty with, you know, sudden sharp noises, I really apologize in advance. It's going to get more interesting, I am told. So, yeah. So touched by the sharings that you've offered here. I was really reflecting last night after our small group session, how deeply the practice goes, even now at the beginning when it's a little bumpy, and how precious it is to have this time together, practicing together. Because when there's that trust and that openness that we all offer each other, the sharings go really deep. And that encourages all of us. You know, the practice goes also very deep. And part of the wonderful thing about the honesty of the sharings that people have been offering is that it's so reassuring. If you've had a bad day or the practice is not where you'd like it, you don't feel so alone when you hear somebody else going, oh yeah, me too. So if you also are experiencing some bumpiness at the beginning of the retreat, you know, somebody's expression of that is really affirming. And if you're experiencing challenges, please understand this is both par for the course, as we say in English, and necessary. It's part of the process. Especially if you're experiencing challenges that often come with, oh, I should know better, but, you know, with some level of judgment or, oh, geez, you know, all this practice and I'm still doing this. Please do not feel embarrassed because it's pretty universal. This is the nature of the mind, that wherein metta is concealed. When our natural purity of mind is, you know, not accessible to us. And sometimes it can feel like, well, we know better in the mind, in our thoughts. Maybe, for example, somebody says something to us during the day and it really bothers us. And we know I should be able to radiate metta to this person, but no. The head knows I should be able to, but the heart's like, uh-uh. Or maybe the practice is boring or we can't really engage in it in the way we'd like. And we know the benefits of metta. And we think, I should be, fill in the blank, but no. Or we think, after all this practice, no. I don't know if you can hear that in the background. Yeah. After all this practice, and this is still coming up, I should know better. Or that experience of finding rest on the cushion or in our formal walking practice. But the moment we open our eyes, our mind goes crazy with self-judgment, judging others, and we see it so clearly. It's quite disconcerting. It's like, I shouldn't be doing this. I'm here to practice metta. But there it is. No matter how much we've practiced, these things can happen, especially if we've done a lot of practice, actually. Not because the practice is going badly. Quite the opposite. Everything that is not metta is revealed with this stark clarity. That's what's so disconcerting. We see where the mind goes or can go. Or we see where we really don't want to do. We don't want to radiate metta. We want to be angry in a moment. This can happen. Or we want to feel sorry for ourselves or whatever is coming up. Even if we know the benefits of metta, even if we've experienced the benefits of metta, and at this point in the retreat for a lot of us, even those of you who've been practicing this metta retreat the last 2 weeks, it's universal that there can be this resistance. This, or it could be resistance, it can be complacency. It can be boredom with the process. It's like, haven't I done this a million times? All these things can arise. And there are many reasons for this. For example, it could be we've revealed or we've seen through the ego in the practice to a certain extent. And then there's a backlash. Ego backlash, I call it. Or maybe we're impatient. We've had enough of this greed, aversion, delusion stuff, and we just want to live in metta. But that's not what experience is showing us. There's lots and lots of reasons for bumpiness. But the story of why things might be difficult in the practice doesn't actually matter so much. What really matters is what we do with those experiences. Remembering what Ariya said so beautifully yesterday about how metta is an attitude of friendship, a friendly attitude. And this is one of the biggest challenges, is how can we be friendly with these difficult experiences? How can we train the puppy mind without losing patience and wanting to smack ourselves or jerk on the leash? Get over here. That's not metta. Of course it's not. It can feel really challenging, not just to accept with this radical kindness. But some of us know best how to practice when we're almost militaristic, ardent. Wanting to, you know, uproot things. But that's not the metta practice. And so sometimes we're afraid that we're just complacent. But that's actually not what's happening. When we rest with kindness, no matter what's happening, knowing what's there and inclining to metta anyway, not with force, not pushing any of it away, but just letting it be there, not doing anything with it, not engaging with whatever it is, the boredom, the resistance, the complacency. Just not, oh, complacency, and to engage. And it can be the tendency at this time to really forcefully engage, to take the mind and really nail it to the metta phrase, to jerk on the puppy's leash with a little bit of violence, because that's what we know. It takes so much patience, and it requires that we have a new relationship with work, with effort. That's why understanding right effort is so important. And as you know from the talk, the recorded talk, right effort isn't about force. It's about direction. It's about using the energy of the practice to guide the mind kindly to metta. The practice is not linear. And this is part of the problem. This is part of what impatience and complacency comes from. especially in patients. It's like we think, oh, I just have to go from A to Z, A, B, C, D. No, it doesn't work that way. It's more circular. I think of it as a helix, like a descending corkscrew. But we are so much more familiar with a linear way of thinking about things. The perceptions we have, the concepts we bring, how we hold the practice, really deeply is conditioned by this linear thinking. And by the thinking that, well, if I try really hard, I should be able to get from A to B to C to D, and it, you know, it's going to be linear and nice. And the harder I work, the faster I'll go. And that's what matters. Of doing it right, you know, that's another place where we can really get caught. So if the practice cycles in and out of difficulty, it may very well be we're getting deeper and deeper and deeper into the metta practice. But it feels, from this linear way of thinking, it feels like things have dropped back, or that we're stuck somehow. And if we get involved in that kind of thinking, oh, the practice isn't going well anymore, it's dropped back, or oh, here I am again, I'm so stuck, it's just not, ugh, it's so discouraging. So obviously dwelling on these thoughts is not helpful. Best thing we can do when these experiences arise is just however we can to keep going. We say often, and this is something we all know intellectually, so we keep saying it, but it takes a while to drop in. Please, please, please do not assess your practice based on what's arising, based on how pleasant it is or unpleasant, based on how peaceful it is or how chaotic, based on the presence or absence of difficulty. It's just, assess your practice by whether you can really just be with whatever's arising and keep gently guiding the mind back to metta. That's what matters. And even, you know, we know, we, oh, I shouldn't be judging my practice, but of course we do that too. It's hard not to do that because our conditioning is so strong. But please, take your internal map of the practice, whatever it happens to be. Be aware that it's there and put it aside. Just put it aside. Understand it's just concept. It's just an idea. What's arising in the practice, what is vivid and alive, is what's happening in this moment and our relationship to that. It's whatever connection we're training ourselves to access again and again and again. Both the training aspect of the practice and the purification aspect of the practice are messy. And sometimes I think they need to be messy. we encounter everything that gets in the way of metta. I said that before, I'll say it again. This is the ego. Hang on. That's why these moments of ego backlash are so very interesting. Because often what happens if we drop into a place of profound metta, what can happen is, especially we get up from the cushion and boom, you know, there's this explosion of some aspect of the ego. Yeah, this is natural. We've dropped into a new place. And there's more purification, there's more training that needs to happen. So simply paying attention and caring for all of this, not assessing, not trying to figure out where we are between A and Z, but just caring for ourselves in this. Making these challenges our small and humble place of practice. We don't have to be, you know, meditative superstars. That's not why we come to practice. We come to this practice in order to care. In order to develop the tender, kind heart of metta. So, really take this on. And in this way, we find the beauty and the refuge of metta. It's what allows so much kindness in the face of the world. Couple of people yesterday in the small group meeting were speaking of how it was for them between the two retreats and how much of a refuge metta has become, even if things are going not easily. And how really the main work of the practice is that right effort, that just constant inclination, no matter where the mind is habitually about to go, inclining it to metta instead. I was inspired by what Aria spoke yesterday about Teresa of Lisieux. She did not live long. She died in her 20s. And she had a humble, not special practice, but really a profound one. I was inspired to do a little more reading about her after Aria told her story yesterday. She had a fiery temperament. As a child, she had tantrums all the time. Even in, you know, into when she was 8 or 9 years old. And I can relate to that. I have a mind that has tantrums too. But inclining to, she made this habit of inclining to the people that bothered her. Once she was in the monastery, and I can tell you, you're in a monastery, you don't choose who you're living with, and there's always someone. But she would incline to be with these people to deepen her capacity to love. Because she knew that this was her doorway in. And this is our doorway in. So all our difficulties, in a small, humble way, just resting there, understanding that, yeah, this is how the metta gets strong and powerful. much as we would prefer, you know, those nice, quiet, beautiful, deeply concentrated sittings. Those are good too. There's nothing wrong with that. But the difficulties, this is where we really learn the depth of metta. So really embracing this. So I leave the reflections with this to begin the practice. And today we will not move on to a new category. We go to another benefactor. A second benefactor, perhaps you've already had somebody come to mind as you've been practicing with the benefactor. Finding a second person. And I want to reiterate here and kind of tell a quick story about the question that Mune Q came up with about, does this person need to be alive? And my experience of this was, yeah, you know, I'd heard this, but had no reason to think it was important. I was doing a long retreat, and I had the habit each evening of radiating metta to a beloved teacher. He was very, very easy to radiate metta for. I could connect easily, I could see the face, and there was just a sweetness to this connection. So it was really, really easy. And one night in the middle of the retreat, I would do it when I was doing walking meditation after tea time. And I'm walking back and forth, and it wasn't easy that particular day at all, in a way that was really quite strange. It felt like the metta was just bouncing back. I mean, there was no connection at all. And I took it personally, as we tend to do, because my practice must not be going well today, And I went on with my practice without really thinking about it after that. I was doing Vipassana practice, so I did the metta, but it was just, The next morning, a note went up on the bulletin board that this benefactor had died. And I thought, It was a really visceral, felt experience. And often, you know, we want to radiate metta for people who are beloved to us, who have passed on, wherever they are. Who knows? Keeping that for all beings, or in your general activities, you can radiate metta for all beings. But choosing a benefactor, a second benefactor, who is alive, as far as you know, and just staying with that. Remembering that seeing the goodness is the proximate cause. So because this person is a source of inspiration and a source of benefit to us, This is the engine of a lot of metta. So, taking a moment before we sit to reflect, who will it be for you? And beginning the sitting with the first benefactor, or for you, wherever it's easiest. For some minutes, we'll practice in silence. And I'm going to ask Aria again after 5 minutes, after the sitting's been going for about 5 minutes, to ring a little bell. And when you hear the bell, that just means to move on to this second benefactor. Please don't worry if it's a little bumpy. It may be quite smooth, who knows? But it might also be a little bumpy, and this is natural. Just keep going. Doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. Just keep going. Moment to moment to moment. So please settle back. When you're ready, close your eyes. Connect with the heart, perhaps by taking a couple of deep breaths. Really be present in this body. And when you feel grounded in that kind presence, beginning to radiate metta for whomever it's easiest, whether it's the first benefactor or yourself, continuing that practice in the silence, connecting again and again and again with this tender well-wishing. So for the next 24 hours, the instruction is to stay in your formal sitting and your formal walking practice with this second benefactor, just as you've done before. And as before, to really get creative and open up in general activities, to however best for you to maintain a continuity of inclination. So it may be a more open, free-flowing metta. It may be radiating metta for yourself, for all beings, for anybody right around you. It matters less in the general activities for whom you're radiating the metta, that you maintain a continuity. And then the surprises happen. As Marita described this morning in the sharing, it's like, whoa, you know, where did that come from? Well, that came from that continuous cultivation. That's where that came from. So just really feel free to play with it, but keep the continuity going. So thank you for your practice, everybody. I'll turn us over now to Aria, who will take whatever questions you have, and please don't be shy, and guide us in the chanting.
Yes, and I see Christine has up her hand, so please.
Hi, I have a question. You know, when the metta isn't flowing freely, I'm sometimes not sure, is it because it's just not flowing freely, or is it because the object of my metta is the problem, so to speak, you know? So my question is, can we switch objects if like one just doesn't seem to resonate? Can we go to another object when we first start out, not midway through the day or something, but you know, when you first start out, I don't usually pick my objects mentally. I pick them whoever surfaces, you know, but sometimes I just don't seem to find the resonance. And then when I do switch, I do find the resonance with somebody else. Is that okay to do?
Thank you, Christine, for this question. So, you know, it might be both, that your practice isn't flowing because it's not flowing, or because it has to do with the person who is the object. And you know, we have to distinguish, or we have to be understanding that that's part of the practice, that we work through this difficulty when initially the metta is not yet flowing. That, you know, if we stay with this person, and as we have said many times, just diligently, gently do the practice, repeat the phrases, or, you know, just wish it wholeheartedly, that after some time, you know, it starts to flow, and then, you know, the practice goes well. But of course, we also want to do the practice in a way that we do not just struggle to get in contact with the person and that the metta quality arises. That can be hard, you know, and can get us into negativity. And then it would be helpful and appropriate to go to another person where we can easily connect. That could be a person we have already done, already chosen, we have already practiced with. Or, like now when we say choose a second benefactor, when you realize with this person, it's just too challenging, or I'm just struggling you know, then say, okay, I decide to choose another person. But, you know, my take would be, do not do it too easily or too soon, because that's part of the practice, to work through this difficulty or challenge. Yes, Susan, please.
Yes. I was wondering if you could share with us your understanding of purification.
I can, and it could take a whole evening talk or a series of talks over a week. you know, it's...
Maybe I should explain that yesterday when I was really struggling, a teacher, I remember, you know, talking about the process of purification. And of course, I had this thought of, you know, just stay with it. This is the process of purification. And so that's why it prompts me to ask this question, you know, because I had my doubts yesterday in that moment. I had my doubts.
Yes, all right. So, you know, that kind of relates to Christine's question. You know, when I said, if you're struggling with a certain person and, you know, defilements come up, anger or irritation and frustration. So, you know, although you sincerely try to cultivate the metta, you know, not paying attention to the frustration or the anger, but turn the mind again and again to the metta, incline towards the cultivation of it. So you do it for a certain time. But, and you know, then it might be possible that you really connect and that the metta starts to be present, and so then the anger, frustration recedes or disappears. So, you know, that would amount to the purification. So then in that moment with that person, you have purified the mind from the anger or the frustration and replaced that with the quality of metta. But as I have said in the case of Christine's question, if you know you get deeper and deeper into the negativity, the anger or the frustration, despite of your sincere inclination or intention to go to the metta, in that case it would be better to stop with that person and go back to a person for whom it's easy to cultivate the metta. So in this way, you know, you have not overcome the anger in that particular case with that person, but, you know, that will happen at another time. So, you know, we go to our boundaries, to the limit, and then see what happens. And so it's a step forward and maybe a one back again, and then two steps forward. So in this way, over time, gradually, this purification of the mind is happening.
Thank you.
You're welcome. there another question waiting to be verbalized? Well, if there is no question right now, then we can go on to the chanting. Ah, Claudia has come up, okay.
Hey, this is not long. I wonder why we recite in Burmese, not understanding the words. What is the benefit of this?
Because it's a nice metta chant, and although we do not understand the Burmese words, we know what the chant is about. You have the English translation, and so it's a way of also diving or connecting to this Burmese tradition, because you know we have been doing these metta retreats in Burma, in this Burmese environment. And so to pick up a chant from the country where you practice is a nice thing to do. And although now it's this online retreat and you are not here in this country, it's still nice. And, you know, for me, I have a deep connection with it. I am Iranian as well. And those of you who have been here in this country, you also, you know how that resonates. And you know this, I mean the chants that we have on these chant sheets, some are in Pali, and this might also be a strange language for you that you do not understand. Then Sanskrit, another language that many of us are not really familiar with. Or the Swiss German, the Frida, only a limited amount of people here really understand it. But, you know, each language has its own particular flavor, and chanting in that language does something to the heart, even though we don't know the language, but we know the meaning of these words and can relate in this way. So then with this, yeah, let's go. And I would like to start on page 1 at the bottom. It's the 4 aspirations. We'll do it a number of times, just the way it is written here. Later on in this retreat, we can do it with some variations. So then let's start.
Sabe sata avera hontu, sabe sata abia bacha hontu, sabe sata aniga hontu, sabe sata sukhiyatanang pariharantu, sabe sata avirahantu, sabe sata abhyabhachahantu, sabe sata aniga hontu, sabe sata sukhiyatanang pariharantu, Sabe sata avera hontu. Sabe sata abia bacha hontu. Sabe sata aniga hontu. Sabe sata sukhiatanam pariharantu. Sabe sata avera hontu. Sabe sata abia bacha hontu. Sabe sata aniga hontu. Sabe sata sukhiatanam pariharantu. And now we will go to the page 6, at the top of the page. This is the chant that popped up in Henny's mind this morning, the Frida in Swiss German. And yes, we have not done it in this retreat so far, so this is the first time. And so for those of you for whom this chant is new and who are not familiar with the Swiss German, with the pronunciation of these words, I just will say the words. Frieda wünsche mir und Frieda wünsche dir, Frieda für uns alle und für die ganze Welt. Frieda wünsche mir und Frieda wünsche dir, Friede für uns alle und für die ganze Welt. So now let's chant it, let's sing it. It's a canon that can be done in 4 groups. So those of you who know it, you can chant it as a canon. We'll do it a number of times. Frieda wünsche mir und Frieda wünsche dir, Frieda für uns alle und für die ganze Welt. Frieda wünsche mir und Frieda wünsche dir, Frieda für uns alle und für die ganze Welt. Frieda wünsche mir und Frieda wünsche And as the last chant, let's go to page 3. At the bottom of the page, it's the four boundless states in English. So then we will start. I will abide pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness, likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth, so above and below, around and everywhere, and to all as to myself. I will abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving-kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. I will abide pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with compassion, likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth, so above and below, around and everywhere, and to all as to myself. I will abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with compassion, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. I will abide pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with gladness, likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth, so above and below, around and everywhere, and to all as to myself. I will abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with gladness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. I will abide pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with equanimity, likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth, so above and below, around and everywhere, and to all as to myself. I will abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with equanimity, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. With this, we conclude this online session, and I have put the link to the recordings of this session in the chat. It's on my website under Talks Audio English. There you will find it. And it continues now with the group interviews. Ivy Aranyani has group C, and I have group F, and so in 5 minutes from now we will meet there. So may all of us be able to dwell, to abide in metta in all the directions for all beings as much as possible. Bye bye. See you soon or tomorrow.